Shalom, and welcome again to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. We hope to, in these podcasts, explore some of the issues that touch on our families, our communities, and our own selves as a result of this revolution in longevity. And you can contact us via our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or via our Facebook page, Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And we welcome your comments either on the voicemail icon on the website or to me, Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. We welcome to the microphone this morning, Dr. Robert Sirota, nephrologist here in the Delaware Valley area, but more importantly, equally as importantly, let me say to that, here to explore something that we've explored a couple of times. It's fascinating to me as we do our Jewish Sacred Aging work. And that is how individuals of our generation who have left full-time work find a passion and reinvent themselves. And so, Dr. Sirota, welcome to Seekers of Meaning. Nice of you to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So, getting right to, not to bury the lead, you've just gotten back from Uganda, not exactly Elkins Park. What was in Uganda and what is Bridge of Life?
So, as a nephrologist, I was associated before I fully retired in March of this year with a dialysis company, DaVita, that sponsors a philanthropic organization called Bridge of Life, which has a number of activities, including opening up dialysis units in disadvantaged countries, extending healthcare to the most vulnerable in disadvantaged places, and looking at certain kidney diseases in certain vantage points that we don't have in the United States. The current trip that I went on was a two-week excursion, which ended on Monday in Uganda, in which we did healthcare screening for non-communicable diseases, which include diabetes and hypertension and chronic kidney disease, to people who have unmet needs for medical access and assistance. Uganda is a poor country. It's only 56 years old, and it has some problems when it comes to delivery of healthcare. So while we were there, we screened 1,650 people for chronic kidney disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. And we traveled from Kampala West, ending off on the Rwanda-Uganda border, and we ended up flying out of Rwanda back to the States.
You had a choice. You said you retired a couple of years ago formally from full-time paying work.
To be specific, I retired from my primary job 2.5 years ago and then took up part-time work in New Jersey doing exactly the same thing I was doing on a slower pace.
Right.
And I retired from that fully at the end of February of 2018.
So instead of taking the mandatory cruise, enrolling in yoga, or perhaps playing golf at the local club, you chose to serve mankind and help human beings. And it's fascinating. What's that motivating factor that moved you? Because the choice is there. You had your youth, your health, good career. I'm sure people said, gee, now it's time to really just enjoy life, you know, travel around the world, you and your wife, just do whatever you want to do. But here you are a couple of months later in Uganda.
Yeah, well, I was looking for, I'm a guy who's been in medicine for 39 years. And there are a lot of reasons that I was in medicine. When I started my career, I was in medicine because it was interesting and I was technically good at it. And 10 years after that, when I became expert at it, because it takes 10 years out of training to become an expert in anything, I suddenly started devoting myself to the relationships that I was actually building in with my patients and with my colleagues in medicine. And in the last part of my career, that was actually the most important thing and the thing that gratified me most. And when I fully retired from being very busy, I didn't feel like retiring from that. I wanted to continue in a venue that would allow me to use what talents I had, both in medicine and relationship building, in endeavors that I didn't have to do. Because when you're in a career, there's a lot of things that are that come along with the career that make it less rewarding. I've left all the less rewarding stuff behind, and now I'm doing only the stuff that really pushes my buttons, which is to make relationships and, as you said, make mankind a little bit better, and practice some medicine, which I still am addicted to.
What is it that you think drives a lot of the baby boomers to do this, to really reinvent and not retire, but which to me is a dirty word, but it's the concept of transitioning to a different stage or style of life, but still not letting go of that passion that makes it worthwhile getting up in the morning.
There's a lot of things that go into it, but I have good health. So full disclosure, I'm 70 years old. But I don't think I think like a 70-year-old. In fact, I can relate to the way I was thinking when I was 25 years old and still in medical school. And if somebody didn't tell me that I was there, that I'm at this stage of life, mentally, I would think I was in that stage of life. So I all because I retired doesn't mean that I wasn't going to feel the way I did, 30 years ago. And when I retired, the first time I retired, when I retired, I made some kind of comment to my wife that, I was about not being a doctor. And she said to me, she said, "You're always going to be a doctor. Right. You're just not working as a doctor." And, I thought about that for about 3 seconds and realized that she was correct. And, I started looking for opportunities. As I said, this was a given opportunity that I knew about but hadn't explored to do exactly what I've been doing, because this is actually my second trip, Richie. My first trip was in the end of May. We went to Bolivia, another extremely poor country, and we looked at a particular kind of kidney disease in sugarcane cutters. And that disease is restricted to sugarcane cutters in certain locations, including Nicaragua and Sri Lanka. And we were looking for it in Bolivia. And these patients were even more disadvantaged than the ones in Uganda, because they're migrant workers. So I got started in May doing that. And then this trip came along and I just said, yeah, I'd like to go.
Did they recruit you or you found them?
As I said, there was a natural connection. One of my partners and my best friend had done that a year ago while he was still working. I did not find any room or space in my life to do it while I was fully working. But as soon as it was an aspiration, and as soon as I retired, I sought them out and made a relationship with them in Denver. Which is where the organization is based. And then we went from there.
So you spent most of your life in American hospitals, fully staffed, technology up the wall, et cetera, et cetera.
Totally.
And then in the last couple of months, you find yourself in Bolivia and Uganda. Let's just say perhaps a little less technologically sophisticated than suburban Philadelphia hospitals.
Yes.
Okay. When you're in that environment, when you're working with these people, in obviously a more disadvantaged medical environment, if I can use that phrase in here, what happened to your soul? What touched you? What touched you with that?
I think what touched me, particularly in Uganda, was the thank yous that I got from patients who we screened so many patients that I literally saw a patient every 10 minutes. But these patients had a lot of gratitude for us being there. And I looked at it as being an ambassador for the United States and my own heritage, because I told people of my heritage. And like I said, they were extremely grateful that we were there. I mean, technology notwithstanding, we had more of an impact in that 10 minutes than I can have in an hour in a technologically suited hospital with 10 doctors seeing each individual patient, which is what's going on in the United States. Here's a situation where I'm seeing patients that have uncontrolled severe high blood pressure and never had their blood pressure taken in their whole life. So, and I might add, just to give you an idea of unmet needs, the average age of death in Uganda, if you live to 5 years old, is 65 years old. If you live to 5 years old in this country, the average age of death is 80. So you can, and the reason for that is it's more, there are a lot of structural reasons, but one of them is unmet medical needs like the one I'm talking about. And if you have severe hypertension for 10 or 15 years, you're going to have a heart attack, a stroke, or kidney failure. And, you know, it's going to cut your life considerably short.
I just got to, the language issue. I mean, in Bolivia, do you speak Spanish?
No. But I was the only one in that group that didn't speak Spanish. One of the greatest experiences I had was my translators in Bolivia, everywhere, actually in Uganda too. They were fabulous. And they were extremely nice people. Interestingly, the person who was my translator in Bolivia was a 24-year-old woman who herself was taking care of 50 indigent children in her community and was doing the translation to make money to put it into her community. And she was extremely intelligent. And I taught her a great deal about, you know, the delivery of medical care, which I love teaching. And when you're teaching people like that, she was asking the questions by the time we were done, and she was giving me the answers that I needed to go forward. So the answer to that is I wasn't speaking Spanish. In Uganda, the official language is English and Swahili. English is spoken with a very thick accent, although it is understandable. But in the regions that we were in, the official language is Lugandan or Luganda. And that language, even we had some African people with us who were from Kenya, and they couldn't speak it either. So we had translators.
I would imagine it's to translate a medical series of medical terms into these languages, especially a tribal language, and because it must be mind-boggling.
My best translators had no problem with it. I can tell you that right now. I had one of my translators was a Pentecostal pastor in a rural community. He had a congregation of 40 people, and another one was a 22-year-old student who was trying to go through her third year of social work school in Uganda before she graduated. And they were super translators.
What was their take in asking you? I'm sure you had some time off and you would sit around having a cup of coffee and so to speak. I'm interested, especially in Bolivia and South America, very different obviously than Africa. What was their take on America? How many questions about America?
I think that, to be honest with you, I concentrated mostly on what was going on in their country, but they did ask me, questions about, Donald Trump and what's going on in the United States. They have a relatively, I would say, dim view of what's going on in the U.S., but structurally, they don't know how it works. They've got considerable problems of their own, particularly, they have them in Bolivia also, but I'm more familiar with them now in Uganda, actually. They have a country that has had the same ruling situation for 36 years. In fact, when we were in Kampala, the capital of Uganda, there were demonstrations going on that the day we were there against the current government by what's called the opposition. So that government is going to leave soon. The problem in Uganda is corruption. Government corruption drains limited resources. And I think it's a young country. It's repressive, but it's not as repressive as some of the countries around it, actually. But that is a problem. The government needs to kind of move on. At least that's the sense I got from the people I was talking to.
The movement, Dr. Sirota, into transitioning to different phases of life, as you're modeling, without divulging names, I guess, your colleagues, friends of yours who are on the same path, Have they spoken to you about the Jawad is like to do something like this? I want to do something with my life after I leave full time. Or have you been teaching your colleagues about this transition?
Many of my colleagues are not fully retired yet, and I am quite open about what I'm doing. They're seeing what I'm doing, and I would say that they're not asking too many questions. I have a twin brother who is not retired yet, and he's asked me many questions since we're almost identical in many regards. You know, he's trying to find what's going to be meaningful in his life when he retires. And I would say that, as I was saying before, people who are always in demand, being called, doctors, rabbis, lawyers, the day after they retire, the phone stops ringing and it's, what am I going to do? Gee, nobody called me today. Nobody needs me anymore. And I think it is a challenge to get over that. And I think I've talked to some people about this. I think that you can define how you're going to do in retirement partially by what you've been doing before. For those kinds of folks or people, they need to find, or they need to take their time and try to figure out what has motivated them in their whole life. For my own example, I mean, I've been considerably more motivated in medicine for my whole life, actually, than most of my colleagues, to the exclusion of everything else besides my family. I mean, I have hobbies, but they've never been as motivating as actually doing and studying medicine, which I'm still doing. And I'm extremely fortunate because one of my sons is doing exactly what I'm doing. So I talk to him two or three times a week about one case or another or something like that. But, you know, it's everybody's response. You have to start thinking about it. This slowdown thing that I did was very, very useful. So quitting flat from five or 7 day a week work, I wouldn't recommend to anybody who's in the position of having the phone always ringing. I mean, because when I was working 2 or 3 days a week, it gave me the opportunity to just contemplate what I was going to be doing. For example, I took up playing the piano. I never played the piano. I tinkered around with it. I used to play the accordion, but I decided I'm going to take piano lessons. And I'm still taking piano lessons. And it gives me a lot of pleasure to be sitting at a piano. And again, my day-to-day work is over. And one other anecdote that I usually tell is that I was worried about retiring myself from even part-time practice literally until the day after I did it. The day after I did it, I stopped worrying about it because I realized that it was interfering with things that I wanted to do that I could not do if I had commitments to go to work. So, I mean, I think you have to balance one thing against the other and find what's pushing you forward. And just a plug here as well. I went to the Boomer Conference. I don't know if you remember this, at the URJ. And, you know,
I spoke there.
Yeah, you spoke there. I know you did. No,
Sunday morning.
Yeah. And I read Mark Friedman's book.
Right,
and
right.
Mark Friedman, I feel that book is, extremely, because I've read some other retirement books that are horrible. If anybody wants to read a book a little bit about the science or theory of transitions, that would be a useful place to start. It's called The Big Shift. And it was written, I think, in 2012.
Right. And he actually did a program with us for me a couple of years ago that's somewhere on the website. And he's involved. His Encore.org is the website.
Yeah. And he would say that I'm in the encore phase of my life. And I would say I'm in the third stage of life out of four, with the last one being senescence and where you're really not doing what I'm doing. I think with the expansion of time, with the expansion of our lives, I mean, we have more time.
Oh,
at least I do. I'm fortunate. Look, I've seen people who don't have more time and they're not doing well. They can't do what I just did. But The converse is if you have the ability to do things, it's great if you can find out and figure out what you want to do.
Well, this to me, I mean, we teach this in some of the workshops that I do. The spiritual question for our generation is given the gift of time, which we cannot control, no matter how many times you pray. The spiritual question is, what are you going to do with the time that you have left, knowing that you can't control that amount of time? And that is that's the major spiritual question, I think, for our generation, given longevity. And thank God for the miracles of medical science and public health, and that has allowed this longevity to take place. If you were opening up the Dr. Bob Cerrada retirement from medicine company, what advice would you start giving your colleagues? When should you start planning this transition?
Well, like I said, I think that first of all, one of my findings is that most doctors can't figure out when enough is enough. They're afraid to retire. 90% of doctors are a lot like I used to be. You're working full time. You're tired when you get home. You don't develop a lot of outside interest. Now, this is not the paradigm for today. Today's young doctor, including my son, has figured out a way to follow out a lot of different hobbies and extracurricular activities. But that is not the most for a 70-year-old doctor.
Generations. Yeah. Yes, I am so fully aware of that.
So that generation needs to figure out that they can't work forever, and think about a good place to start slowing down. And for me, structurally, I could not slow down in the practice that I had actually created with one other guy. They wouldn't let me. So I basically retired from that practice and sought part-time work with another wonderful group in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And spent I was supposed to be there for 6 months. I spent 2.5 years there. And that was fine. And by the end of, but I would recommend a slowdown mode for anybody. And a lot of doctors who I know do slowdown modes. Some of them foreshorten them after they realize, hey, you know, I'm okay. I really don't need to do this. And some of them, you know, hang on and want to continue to hang on. But in the time that you're not working, if you're slowing down, you need to start seriously contemplating what's important, with the realization, just like you said, that I'm not going to be on this earth forever. I have a finite time. My best friend and I, who I just referred to, had many conversations about aging, about the fact that after a certain period of time, you do enter senescence, or whatever Mark wanted to call it, where you can't do anything. You're infirm, this, that, and the other thing. But in the time that you still have, that you're not working, you need to maximize kind of what you really want to do. And you need to say to yourself, and I think a lot of people do say this to themselves when they use the dirty word of retirement, or they should say to themselves, what do I want to leave behind?
Right.
What am I going to leave?
It's the legacy question.
The legacy question. Mark called it the generativity question. It's the same sort of thing. And I've thought about that a lot. And you know, I sort of feel that the more lives that you can touch. I mean, my wife taught me how to be relational. She really did. And you know my wife, she's relational. And I wasn't relational until after I got over trying to be technically decent at what I was doing. But the relational piece now, what I'm leaving behind is as many lives as I can touch as in a positive way, whether it's by smiling at somebody or giving them something for their medical condition or, you know, whatever, because it all goes toward making people feel better, which is really, in my opinion, what a doctor is supposed to be doing. He's not supposed to be necessarily curing things, because in my business, we don't cure things. In my particular profession, slant on medicine, we're helping people get through their chronic illnesses, and we're making them feel better as much by what we say as by what we do, in my opinion. And I don't think a lot of doctors, actually, that's not a well-recognized trait for most doctors. They need to take that on. I mean, when somebody leaves my job when I was working, and even now, when somebody leaves my office, I want them to feel better than when they walked in, even if I'm delivering a bad message. And it's not easy to do that, but for the most part, I've been able to make them feel secure. People know it, you know, the doctor knows what he's talking about, or I'm going to be all right. Because I usually tell people that they're going to be all right. We're going to get through this. And like I said, that's what I'm doing now as well. When I see, 1,600 Ugandans or whatever, I'm telling them that if you take this medication and you're able to get it, we try to help them get it. You're gonna live longer and you're gonna feel better.
Where's your next trip?
I don't know. I've got a trip in March to Guatemala with a different organization, actually, that I have to make a couple of phone calls today now that I'm back from Uganda, because they want me to call them. And I may do more trips with Bridge of Life. I mean, the last trip, we had an unbelievably cohesive group of 10 people that went with us. And I'd love to go back to Uganda. I want to go back to Uganda, actually. I had never been in Africa. So, as I've said, and this is pretty obvious to most people who are listening, most people go to Africa to look at animals. But this immersive experience that I had was far better for me than looking at animals. I mean, I really was looking at people, the culture. I mean, I got to know a lot of people. They're very, very open. And that's the kind of experiences that I want. I learned a great deal about. I never thought I'd be able to say that I want to go back to Uganda, but I actually want to go back to Uganda. And we had some very bad conditions at certain parts of the trip, living conditions.
You said you learned a lot about the people. My sense is you learned a lot about yourself.
I would say I don't want to dispute what you're saying. I know what pushes my buttons, but I learned a great deal about. I had misgivings about going to Africa. I didn't know what I was getting into. We were in very rural areas. Some of them were war torn from previous civil wars. Some of them were chock full of refugees who'd been living there for 20 years. So I went fully prepared. I will say that I did a fair amount of reading on what was going on politically in the country, which helped me put what I was seeing into a frame of reference for which the people I was asking questions filled in the gaps.
And relationships, doctor, they're the lifeblood of your soul, aren't they?
I would say so. Yeah, they pushed me along. When I left, I had deep relationships with my patients, because in my business, you're seeing the same patient. You can be seeing the same patient for 10, 15, or 20 years. Yeah, which was great. I mean, they're all my friends.
But now you have patients all over the world.
Yeah, I do.
Have you know? Before we conclude, have any of them? Do you give them a mode of contacting you? I mean, if they have access to internet, etc.
They don't. The translators do, and they have my contact.
And have they?
And we want to help some of these translators in their education. Mm. So I had a wonderful doctor partner with me. That doctor is the head of the Syrian American Medical Association, and he's a little bit younger than I am, and he has organized trips to Syrian refugee camps in Jordan. In a very organized way to help those refugees with their medical needs. And I may travel with him, I'm not sure, but like I said, the opportunities are there are endless opportunities to do this stuff.
If a doctor is maybe hearing this or someone gets listens to this podcast, they want to get involved with this, is touching them, is there a way they do this? Could you let the people know?
First of all, Doctors Without Borders travels all over the world.
Right.
And they're in some dangerous locations, but they're doing a lot of work in non-dangerous locations as well. Bridge of Life is sort of restricted in one way or another to nephrologists, right. But many nephrologists are familiar with what I'm talking about in the company. And a best friend again went with their various Christian missionary organizations. One of my patients was for years as a sister who went to Peru every summer running clinics in Peru. There are a lot of opportunities that could be explored on the internet.
Do you know of any through the Jewish community? For physicians through the Jewish community this?
None. Wow. I mean, I haven't explored it, Richie. I mean, I'm sure they're there, but I mean, I haven't really explored it.
Ah, that would be interesting.
I'd love to go to Jordan with this colleague that I was just talking about. I would jump from Jordan to Israel after I was finished with it. And that's not the reason I would go, but I mean,
no.
We have an affinity. And like I said, he's got a very organized organization as well, you know, very robust organization. So I was lucky to be with him. I was also, by the way, I was with the director of Bridge of Life in Bolivia. He had been to Bolivia, he's 69, 31 times since 1991. So you've got people out there that are incredibly devoted and talented to doing this sort of thing. You just have to be, you have to look for these people. I mean, I was, you know, again, I looked for the opportunity. So I think the first piece of advice is, if this is what you want to do, there are many venues, and most doctors know somebody who's gone somewhere. And all they got to do is ask, what did you do, or how'd you do that?
Dr. Robert Sirota, thank you very much for what you're doing, for being one of the unsung heroes, really, you know, and devoting your new career, your encore career, to continuing to save people's lives and to make a difference in their life. And for us, the highest calling. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Thanks. My pleasure. To all of you, thank you again for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. A reminder that we welcome comments and contact at our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. Seekers of Meaning is produced by Steve Lubetkin and recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media in beautiful downtown Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to greeting you on the next Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you, and shalom.